You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael Musselman, joins us. What's up? How was your weekend? Oops, thought he was there. Michael. Say something!
Oh, I thought you were still doing the bumper stuff.
No. Hold on, I'll do it again. I'll reset it. On a Monday after Thanksgiving, joining me from the great state of Texas, is one of its greatest and most patriotic citizens.
Warning, Mac.
I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Buck. But since Buck's not with us, Mike Musselman will join us. Mike, what's up?
Since Buck's not available.
Buck is unavailable. So how was your weekend? What's going on?
It's good.
Did anything exciting? Anything fun? Anything fun?
Everything I do every day is fun.
I know. You're a fun guy.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. That's legit, too, Mike. If you're looking for a good time, if you hang out with Mike, something funny's going to happen.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be a good time. So what'd you do?
So Rudy is
F-18, man.
Yeah, but he posted the wrong information up there, and I tried to get it straight.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. That was not a dust-off crew that got Kyle out. That was Pedro. Pedro out of Bastion. Pedro 2-3. They came down to Marja to pick him up. And Rudy and Metro talked to him, but that was not a dust-offer. So I try and explain it for our friend in Montana, because he's like, it's so funny listening. I always like when he gets in there, like, There were more than one while we were there.
Wait a minute. How do you know it was Pedro?
There's a plaque. Pedro has a plaque. Pedro 2-3. The day they plucked
Kyle Carpenter.
Kyle and the other kid out.
I can't remember his name.
Hang on. I'll pull it. I got it right here.
But it was on the northern edge of our battle space.
Well, yeah, he was 2-9, right?
And we had had some issues that culminated in what was called the medevac shura that went on up at Camp Leatherneck, because we were pissed because of some things that happened in the southern end of Marja and the way business was conducted by the 3rd Marine Air Wing. So one of the things that our air officers did that was great, and the only reason Kyle Carpenter's alive, was that they went to our own dust-off guys, and they asked them that, hey, look, when you see an urgent medevac, right, get posted, and you haven't been sourced, will you go run and turn the bird so that when you are sourced, you just pull the collective and go, and there's not another 12 minutes associated with you running there, starting it before you get in the air. And they said, sure. Well, Pedro saw how fast the medevac times were, because we recorded that stuff and we sent it around and things like that. And they called and they said, hey, man, how are they getting there so fast? And they said, well, if it's below this line, they'll go and turn on it. And so the Pedro guys, you know, very professionally said, hey, we'll do the same thing.
Right.
And so our air officers, I mean, in terms of, and this is kind of stuff that, you know, Mike and I both love, because we love drug deals, in that, you know, go to guys that are professionals and say, hey, look, this is not how we're doing business now, but it makes a lot of sense. But it's 120 degrees on some days, and it's going to be hot as shit, and you might not get ultimately tasked with it. And so it could be a little bit of a pain in your ass, but it's, well, the juice is certainly worth the squeeze. And Pedro signed up for it. So that medevac got there in a heartbeat. Nice.
Did you see the picture?
Yeah, I just saw it.
I can give it to you right here too. Okay.
You know, the weird thing about that medevac was that nobody really knew what had happened when it happened. You know. There was so much confusion when it happened. You know, and they heard somebody yell grenade, and you know, they didn't know where it had come from. Ultimately, in tracing it all down, they found the route that they took and into a compound across the street. And, you know, Afghans don't throw things. They kick things, right? They're soccer people. So to think that somebody could throw a hand grenade and with that kind of accuracy, it was an odd event, and they had not been there for that long either. So wow, that's cool. Where did Mike put
that? That's actually on the helicopter that saved his life.
So how did you get that? Because that wasn't there.
That was there. They just put that not too long ago. Someone sent it to me.
Oh, okay. So it was after he became the recipient of the Medal of Honor.
Yeah, yep.
Right. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually riveted right on the side of the helicopter.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then launched on mission Sierra Whiskey 1121 Delta from Camp Bastion. Efrazio, Nick Efrazio.
Yeah, he got pretty significant injuries from that. And that's the picture. I can't see it, but is Kyle Carpenter in that picture?
Yeah, Kyle's in that picture that Rudy put up.
I'm just looking at it. Is that him?
Kyle's he's
in the middle.
In the
picture.
He's on the left.
Yeah, in the left of the middle, right behind the blue field of the flag.
Yeah, that's him.
Got it. Now, it's a pretty cool story. The, those guys were, we had some really good medevac organizations that worked with us. And, they're helicopter pilots, but when they're monitoring the net and they hear that somebody's crashing but the LZ wasn't cooled off, I mean, they'd put their nose down and they'd go. And, I mean, that takes your breath away because you can understand when they say, sorry, got to get it cooled out before we can get in there. But it was some pretty motivated, you know, and brave air crews that you know, did that kind of work. So it was pretty inspirational to watch on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are something else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some tough business.
Yeah, tough business. And especially like you said, you're monitoring, you know, they're on the radio talking back to the company CP. You got a journal clerk typing what they're saying into a chat window and everybody's watching it. You know, and when you see, hey, he's crashed in the zone, that means they're going to bring him back to life and you still have another 12, 15 minutes to get him, you know, to a hospital, and which he's got to cling to life. And so, I mean, it's now or never. And, you know, those guys, I don't recall ever an incident where a Marine or one of our soldiers died because of a helicopter that wouldn't go into his own. So that's pretty.
No, that was never. No. Yeah. I just sent you another picture through Skype.
I just saw it, then it went away. What happened?
You don't have it anymore?
It was there a second ago, and then it vanished. It was a picture of somebody in a... it was a picture of somebody in... There you go. Who's that?
It's Kyle.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
That's where he was laying down, facing the end.
Pretty amazing for him, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And so I gave Rob a little lesson in, cause he didn't understand that when we said Pedro or a dust off, Kurt come back said the dust off crew were the ones who evacuated our medevac. They too were based out of Dwyer. And then he's like, There was more than one. Well, then that's what I said. Here it is. Okay. So I'm going to say it again. So if you're listening, Rob, Dustop is usually the call sign of all U.S. Army air ambulances, regardless of unit. That started back in Vietnam. Medical evacuation is usually an Air Force term. When you say a medevac, you request a medevac. It's an Air Force terminology, meaning that you're going to get a bird with some type of paramedic EMT, some higher level of medical care on board to transport the patient to the hospital. While as a CASEvac, a casualty evacuation, is usually a Marine Corps term because it's, one, it's a low routine type guys that go back. It's a bird that can be plucked out of the air. And CASEvacs can be armed, where medevacs and dustoffs cannot. CASEvacs are not covered under the GMA Convention, so you can shoot at them all day long. Because the Marine Corps doesn't have a dedicated medevac nor a dustoff platform, we refer to them as CASEvacs in the Marine Corps because it could be anybody.
Right.
So that is your medevac, CASEvac, dustoff quiz for today.
Then maybe to even further confuse the issue, dustoff was the call sign of the guys at Dwyer. As Mike said, Pedro was the call sign of these Air Force guys. And then there was a Brit CH-47 that was called Tricky that had doctors aboard it, medical
right. So,
doctors.
But all, every air ambulance squadron in the United States Army are referred to as dustoff in their
right.
call sign.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so... So when you were in the medevac business, those were the familiar names, Dustoff, Pedro, and Tricky.
Tricky,
yeah. All coming from different places. See, And that's on a daily basis they did their stuff. And Tricky was, did you ever see that Brit, asset, Mike?
Yeah, I was actually, I took a tour in it when I was up in Bastion.
Describe it.
It's a CH-47 with it looks like an operating table.
Yeah,
it's like an operating room in the helicopter. They can't do an operation there. But
there's a table there that they would put a patient on?
Yeah, it's like there's two of them. I have a picture of it. I have to find it. One was always down. Couple of them could fold up, but those guys, it was just like a flying ambulance. Like, I mean, not like an ambulance, like an operator room. It reminded me of an operator room in an aircraft.
I want to see, and it was a 47, right?
Yeah, CH-47.
I want to see the inside.
You won't find any pictures.
Well, here's
I guarantee you won't find any pictures.
Here's one. Of a dude inside a 47. It's a British doctor.
Yeah, and it's probably empty.
Well, they're shooting a picture of him in front of the cockpit. So,
I'll have to look. It's somewhere in my, not on my phone or anything, but it's like, it's somewhere in my many, many, many photos that lay on my computer all over the place.
Yeah. I always wondered, I'd heard that it had an operating table inside.
But not an operating table. That's a bad word. I mean, it looks like one. But I don't know the level, but it's the highest level from, it's like a flying trauma set, like an emergency room.
The downside to Tricky and is the length of time that it takes to get into the air because they have to stock it. They not only have to turn it and get it in the air, but they have to stock it with. Normally, they brought whole blood with them, and they have doctors. So really, the medevac clock stops when whoever you're trying to medevac goes on to Tricky, And the downside is that instead of it taking maybe 20 minutes to get there, it might take it 40 minutes to get there. And so so we had some issues with
yeah, that. But I think Tricky had a thing where it never lost the patient.
No, our issue was that 40 minutes, the Marine died, bled to death. And we could have launched somebody who could have got him on an operating table.
Yeah, but that wasn't he wasn't in a bird, though.
Well, he died before
the bird got there because of the arguments.
Yeah, right. So that's one of the two incidences that caused this meeting to take place. The other one was Marine stepped in the Sistani Peninsula. A sergeant by the name of Zeringer stepped on an IED just as he was calling his team leaders together, his fire team leaders, and I want to say all four of them were wounded, Zeringer very seriously. And there was a routine dog bite medevac lifting maybe, I don't know, 10 clicks away at Bob Hansen. And so our guys are screaming, reroute that guy to pick him. And they wouldn't talk to us. They wouldn't. So it's pretty,
Yeah,
it was very, very unpleasant. We were unhappy.
Well, because you had guys up in Leatherneck that wanted to be King Poobah.
Yeah, really. I mean, they were.
We're the guys that.
They're really.
We're a division. Right. We're higher than you.
Right. Really unprofessional.
Doesn't
really,
make you smarter than us.
And then they got replaced by the 2nd Marine Air Wing, who came in, and they were just
professionals.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, my name's Bronzy. I'm here to paint. That's the way they showed up. Came down, sent their guys down to hang out with us. And again, we had smart, good guys, head in the game guys all the time. And I think I'd like to think we made them smarter, and we worked with them incredibly. And it was just frustrating, though. The first part of that deployment was frustrating because you had, in my opinion, unprofessional people. And so,
well, you had guys that wouldn't let their ego, their pride go away. Man. Like,
they wouldn't even take a phone call. That's the kind of shit.
We will let you write this in your summary for your Legion of Merit. Just let us do it, though. We won't take credit, I promise. And that's what the kind of shit that used to go on.
And like, here's the other thing they made you do. In order for you to do a helo insert, you had to do...
Oh, my God.
You had to do get them a survey of the LZ, aerial photographs, blah, blah, blah. And there's nothing but flat land where we're at.
Yeah.
No.
Like desert. Yeah.
This is the stupidest shit you've ever seen. And
take
so,
a picture of, but you could literally go out the back door, take a picture, and send it to them because that's what it looked like for the last, the 100,000 square miles around us.
It was amazing. And it's just hard. It was just hard.
With a thin layer of dust. No, there's sand. I mean, it was hard packed, but it had like 6 inches of dust on it, like moon dust.
So when we came back home, I went and became the ops of MEF headquarters group. One day I wound up having to take the commanding officer's place, I think because I was the opso and the exo at one time for a while. And we had a guy who came, and he thought it was his swan song, like last year and a half. And MEF headquarters group winds up taking all these little debts that SO Special Operations Training Group got thrown at them. And it was happening all the time. Hey, we need a group to go here. All right, take this. Get these guys. Send them over to SOTG. Get them trained. Get them ready to deploy. Right? Have their family and I. And it was just, it was launching and recovering all this stuff. And so it was a busy, it was a busy place. So anyway, I have to go. So this guy shows up, and then he quit. He resigned his commission. He said, "Yeah, I didn't come here for this." Like, bro, you can't. You're gonna pull the chute. So anyway, he pulls the chute. I go to this meeting, and I see the chief of staff of the 3rd Marine Air Wing, which is at Miramar, which was the air wing that we had the unpleasant experience with. So a basic school friend of mine is the chief of staff there. I won't say his name. So I see him before the meeting. He's like, "Mac, what's up?" I'm like, "Nothing good." He says, "What are you here doing?" I said, "I'm here being the XO of MEF headquarters group." And he said, I said, And he told me he's with Chief of Staff of the 3rd Marine Air Wing. I said, are you going to, I hopefully you're in the process of unfucking that lash up. And he looked at me and he said, what are you talking about? He said, they're not fucked up. I said, you're right. That's an insult to every fucked up unit in the Marine Corps. They're incredibly fucked up. I just worked with them in Afghanistan, and they're the worst. And he said, well, I think you're full of shit. And I said, I don't care what you think. I worked with them. Were you with them in Afghanistan? He said, no. I said, they were horrible. He looked at me and said, I'm done talking to you. I said, all right.
Yeah.
Take it for what it's worth.
There was a lot of, yeah. But there was a lot of that going on.
This first
was tough.
Frustrating, especially when you see bad things that aren't. If you can imagine this, routine medevac for a fucking dog bite lifting up, and Marines in critical condition that are urgent medevacs, and they won't take your phone call, they won't divert that. Right, guys are. I mean, talk about clicking off safe, crazy people. So anyway, all right. So happy Thanksgiving.
It was tough.
Yeah, it wasn't pleasant. I went down to Ramona on Friday and saw guy who was my company gunny and first sergeant when I was a company commander at 3rd LAR and had and spent an awesome day with him. I haven't seen him in 25 years. But you know, yeah. You know how you walk through the door and there's some people that it's like you
glad you haven't seen him in 25 years? Yeah.
But it doesn't, you walk in and you say, what's up, man? And you just start talking and it's like you've never been apart. He's that guy, just an awesome staff NCO, a lot like you. Awesome with Marines. Hard on them, you know, good sense.
I wasn't hard on anybody. Good
sense of humor, and we had an awesome time.
Not me.
Good time together. So yeah, but Ramona, man, I cannot
believe. I had a
horrible
sense of humor. I took everything everybody said to heart.
No, you didn't. You were not.
I cared immensely about what other people thought of me
and their feelings,
and their emotions. I'm just getting emotional thinking about this.
He's a giver. I had a wonderful time. But you know what's amazing is how much, how many people are living out that way now. In Ramona, man. Yeah, I was surprised driving out that way. So
is Ramona?
It's east of Poway.
I mean, there's something east of Poway?
You would think, like, there's an edge and the world falls off of that, but...
Think Poway would be that edge, like Riverside, Poway.
Did Montana Man live out there in Ramona?
East of Poway. You got to remind me. Like, up towards the 15?
No, that's west of Poway.
No, like, is it north of the... the 10. North of the 10? Are you north of the 10?
Poway, the 10? What the hell are you talking about?
Like, give me... No, Poway... Is it north or south of Highway 10?
Interstate 10?
Yes.
Interstate 10 is fucking Riverside, Pasadena. It's that shit.
Where the fuck is Poway?
Poway is a little bit north of Miramar.
Oh, down there by San Diego. Dude, I haven't been in there in a long time.
I guess. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be like due east of Miramar.
Due east of Miramar. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Oh. I thought that's like Palomar Mountain Observatory up there.
Yeah, that's kind of, there's a lot of that stuff going on out there, but.
Lake Julian, yeah.
Ramona is like over the mountains from Poway.
Yeah, then, now I know where you're talking about.
There's a valley in there, and
yeah.
I was amazed at all the life that spread out that direction. So, but it was
good.
Yeah.
Well, those are the people that are going to eventually make their way out of California. Because that's what they're trying to do. Keep moving east, boys. We're in Arizona. Keep moving east.
They set up their own colony, geographically divided. All they got to do is control the choke points in and out. And they're like, we got the Republic of Texas right here in Ramona, California. And there's horses.
When we stand alone.
Horses everywhere. horses everywhere.
Oh, out there. It's a big, yeah, big, big ranching area out there.
Right.
It used to be like that all the time, though.
Yeah, a lot of like, that in rural California.
Yeah, well, those are the good people still.
Yeah, and that was like Poway used to be. Now it's a part a suburb of San Diego, but it used to be Poway, Escondido were islands, man. There was nothing near them. Yeah. I remember going to Escondido in the 70s. I think we drove on a dirt road to get up there to go see a friend of my grandmother's. My grandmother came to visit. It's like, can we go see my friend Florence who lives up in Escondido? Like, where's Escondido?
Hell, luckily, you had dirt roads. We had to go by horseback.
Nice shit you not, man, in the 70s. Yeah, there was no I-15. I don't know what the hell the road was up there, but it's where I-15 is now, but it was a two-lane road going up to Escondido. So, but it, yeah, nice weather in the winter. That's why they lived there. The,
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Email. Interesting listening to you guys talk about your good and bad memories of medevacs. Can you go through the system of how medevacs are assigned? You want to explain that, Mike?
Well, assigned? Yeah. I mean, that's okay, so.
Guy calls. Somebody's.
Guy calls. There's a mission number generated. Like I said, okay, so you have three categories for medevacs, CASDVACs, right? You have routine, priority, and urgent. So routine is, you know, within 24 hours. And that's why I said usually you can CASDVAC that guy, put him on a bird. You know, hey, we got a B-22 dropping off mail. Okay, hey, put Jones on there.
Yeah, he's got an infection.
Yeah, he's got an infection. He's got a dermatology appointment.
Yeah, he's going to the dentist, some shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's it. That's a routine type thing. So then you get your urgent or you know, priority.
Priority.
Priority is next. Priority, you know, so now you're talking about not – he won't lose his life, but he could lose a limb. Right?
In what period?
You could lose an eye.
In what period of time?
Within, I think it was, what, 4 to 6 hours? 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah, something like that.
But that's a losing a limb or eyesight. So, priorities, injury to the eyes, things like that. Generally non-life threatening. Okay? Where your highest, your urgent are he's going to die. You know, an urgent medevac is, but see, the problem with over there was just about everything was almost an urgent because there was so many blast wounds or, you know, concussed wounds, things like that. You didn't know the extent of the injury. It's not like you can't see him bleeding. He could be messed up, you know, and I always look back at, you know, when I was back at 3-5 in Iraq, we did a medevac on one of our guys. When Smith died, Ross Smith, and he was in the back of the truck talking all the time, you know, keeping it up. And we get there and he's dead. And, you know, not a scratch on him, but the blast had torn apart his aorta of his heart. And he's bleeding internally. We never knew it. So,
yeah, those are the ones that shock and crush people. Because they say, like, Mike, no, there's no way he died.
You're like, no, you're talking about Ross.
Wrong guy. He was talking. He was alert when we dropped him off. Yeah, he had this going on inside of him, and he died on the operating table. I've got the definitions. Routine within 24 hours, priority within 4. And I want to talk about these two because they changed. Urgent within 2 hours. Urgent surgical within 2 hours. In Iraq, we had this urgent surgical, which meant this guy's going to die within the hour. And then, as Mike is saying, urgent meant a lot of different things within 2 hours. And most of the time, you know, a lot of those guys didn't have 2 hours. But when we went to Afghanistan, they didn't have the urgent surgical designation anymore. Do you remember why?
Right.
I heard it was a non-NATO term, so they dropped it when we went to when we went to Afghanistan. But I liked Urgent Surgical because when you heard that, you knew, you know, this thing has to go now. And there was there was a greater urgency when you heard those words.
But. Yeah, but like I said, I think it was, you know, so it was too much. You always, if it came down to it, you always erred on the side of Urgent Surgical.
Right. Right. As so, well, I mean, as well you should.
Then Urgents all became Surgicals. I mean, so it was like, I didn't really agree with that, you know, breaking that thing up. Urgent's urgent. You know? So.
Yeah, I did, and the reason, and again, you're right. If people don't want to do it right, but when you're resourcing assets, and somebody's, you've got a below the knee amputee that's stabilized, right, and you've got a tourniquet on it.
He's urgent.
When you got a guy who's got an ID that was a directional ID that blew into his pelvis, and this guy's going to bleed to death if you don't get him on an operating table now, and even then he might bleed to death because it's a race between the vascular surgeon's skill and him bleeding out and going through organ, you know, failure because of all the different blood he's got going through his body. That's Urgent Surgical. So I liked it, but okay. So it gets a number, and then explain the PEC process. There's people that are monitoring assets, hospital beds, emergency rooms, and they're in the tactical, the COC for the aviation element.
Well, I mean, it gets really complicated at this level because now we're talking about, so Bastion, okay, so there's three hospitals within the short region. There's the one at Leatherneck. There's the one at Leatherneck and Bastion.
Right.
Then there's the other one at, what's the city where the Brits are?
Lashkargah.
There's one at Lash, and then there's one at Dwyer.
And for gunshot wounds to the head, they went straight to Kandahar.
And yeah, then there's Kandahar for brain wounds, for brain stuff. And so, I think Lash was more of the burns.
I thought that was my recollection serves me. That was at an NGO hospital run by Italians that we took civilians to.
No. That was in Kabul. Yeah. But that was in Kabul or something.
No, that was in Lash, man. I was surprised. Well,
we sent guys to Lash that had burns.
I don't remember
suffered that. Burn.
Who ran that hospital? The Brits had a hospital.
The
in
Brits.
Lash?
It was like a multinational
in Lash.
And last.
Yeah, the only thing I remember.
We did medevac guys usually there because they would go to either Bastion or Leatherneck, and then from there they'd go over there. Then they'd come back. So Bastion Leatherneck was the biggest hospital. Okay. It had the most capability. It was a rigid structure. So ours was a tent structure. Still freaking nice.
Yeah,
but
pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, but not as many. I think we had two or three surgery rooms. We had I want to say it was eight in the trauma in the emergency room. But operating rooms, we had three or two, one of them. Whereas in Bastion, they had like six. And it was the medical professionals that they had there on the staff. I mean, we had some really talented dudes there was one guy, and I think he was a pulmonary or a heart surgeon or something at Dwyer that saved one of the Marines, did surgery on his heart or near his heart. And
amazing.
It was
stuff.
One of those. If he would have been evacuated to Bastion, he would have died because that specialist was here at Dwyer.
And so the PEC knows where these specialists are, and they know who's on what operating tables, and so they advise.
Yeah, they know it's in detail.
Yeah, they advise the tactical action officer in the
PEC is made of
Navy personnel.
Or made of what's their names? They're medical guys, but they're like unseen commander type trained people that have all of the information at hand. And the PET can override DASK.
In terms of vectoring...
Vectoring birds, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
They normally didn't do it, but they would do it every once in a while.
Yeah, normally what they'll do is they simply look at the TAO who launches the... He's the guy who launches, who says, when he gives the order, dust off, take him to Bastion, Leatherneck. He's the guy who gives that order. And the helicopter...
So on the flight line...
The helicopter can't move until that guy gives that order. And you have the PEC advising that guy of what asset to use and where to send them.
Well, okay, so on the flight line, what normally happens is the guys, they have ready guys on deck and ready crews. So on deck, and those are the guys ready to go. The crews are already, they're suited up. They walk around with their gear on. They sit and watch TV. They write letters. You know, they're doing whatever. But they're in the ready room. They're ready to go. So then what happens is just kind of like the movies in the fire department, you know, emergency 51. And so they, once they hear the boom, they are running to the birds and they're powering up. APUs are on, gears coming on, everything coming on, and they're getting all the information out over the radio. You know, and this is before anything's even passed. Their birds are turning. They're spinning up. So it takes a while. And then they'll actually lift off from that pad to what they call the arming pad. And usually the chase bird does that. They'll lift off, and the arming pad is another helicopter pad, but a big concrete wall in front of it. And that's where they arm all everything, get ready to go, take all the little flags out, says remove before flight. You know, everything is getting ready to go. And then they're sitting on the pad, burning, spinning, and then they get the launch authority to go with, and they got all the information. Boom, 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 where to go, who they're picking up, and where to take them. And then it's a mad dash there.
So you can see, as we kind of walk through this, the difference between, and I would tell you the reason Kyle Carpenter's live, is when that event happened, those guys ran to the bird and they were doing all the stuff that Mike just described as the battalion and the regiment. We were collecting the information to get the bird launched. And so it was, instead of happening sequentially, it happened simultaneously, which subtracted 10 to 15 minutes from the medevac.
Right, because we would drop in as soon as we would hear on the radio, you know, stand by for nine-line. We would drop in medevac.
Yes.
You know,
stand by.
Boom, right into the chat. And the chat window is like a rolling text. It's like a constant rolling text. You can have a conversation with like 50 people at one time, but it's constant.
Right.
It's real time. And there's some chat windows you just don't screw around in, and that being one of them. That's like, that is the most, like, don't ever screw around in the medevac chat window. You know, because that's reserved for shit like that. So then they just drop in there, and it has your each, like Mac had a ID tag in the front of his chat, and it said Senior Watch Officer SWO First Marine or First Marine Reg SWO. And so some tags have more precedence than others. So like, you know, Big Dave had, you know, Grizzly 6, or, he had 6 on his. And, you know, so when you see that drop in there, First Marine Reg, SWO says medevac, okay. And so now they're spinning up.
You know, it's amazing in this chat room. I mean, for instance, I would have maybe, you have these big monitors, right? So I would maybe have, I don't
10
know,
chat rooms.
10 chat windows open. And then what our chat programs really evolved in that you could turn different words different colors. So you would build this kind of your own vocabulary. Mine was medevac, tick, all came on the screen red. So even though you had all these windows open, when you saw red, you knew it was one of those events. and your eyes immediately slewed to that. And we educated everybody in the COC how to do this. And so, I mean, we would be on this shit. Yeah, we'd be on this shit. And then we went over to Dustoff. Yeah, and we taught them, hey, if you want to watch these windows, this is where this information is going to come from. You know, you can either watch this window of ours and you'll see it there, or you can watch our air window. You'll see it there, because normally the air officers from the battalion would immediately put it into the air window, standby for urgent medevac. And so you knew based on the geography of the battle space that battalion owned, where generally it was going to be. And that really, for the most part, unless there was something going on, dictated who was going to get the medevac. And so, and then they would run to the bird and they would spin. Yeah.
And it was, I mean, there's so much stuff in those chat windows. Those were, you know, when I was back and I was sitting in my office and I'd be doing something, you have three computers. You know, so you had your Nipper, Sipper, and was it Centrix or?
Yeah, Centrix. Centrix was a joint, and then you had the white line. You had that was your Nipper, though.
Yeah, that was my green. You didn't have green in your shop.
I wasn't special.
Yeah. So, Nipper, I could watch movies. Stream movies live from Netflix, because I had good internet.
Yeah, he would come in and say, hey, dude, when you're done, come in. I'm watching this movie. It's you got to see this.
Yeah.
What? Dude, no, you have to. It's awesome. And
that was cool.
But you can see, I mean, and all this stuff, the ability to communicate now so fast, and there's rules with all these windows, and it's okay if you want to watch, but
the problem is too much information, Mac, and that's what they're at right now.
If you're not, but again, I would say that most of that information is, and that's what was the beauty of we couldn't use it, because I remember when we got ready to go to Afghanistan, I'd used this program. It was called Merck, but you couldn't use it for whatever reason, copyright reasons or whatever, in the United States. You could only use it forward. And so when we were training in 29 Palms, you know, the system we used sucked. Because, as Mike said, you get all this information that's coming in from all these different units. You know, this patrol is doing this, right? This PSYOPs unit with this security element is now leaving. Route clearance is doing this. This stuff comes in nonstop. And if you don't have a way to visually identify and differentiate, you can get overwhelmed very easily if you're having to read that kind of shit, because it's too much, it's TMI, too much information. And so the beauty of this program, by the color differentiation, it allowed you to know any kind of kinetic event on my screens were yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was SAF, RPG, machine gun, all those terms were yellow. GSW stood for gunshot wound. The term urgent, the term medevac, all red. So, like, you'd be sitting there watching, you know, and doing something
else.
Well,
the box would blink and it would turn colors. Yeah.
And those
colors. Because you could minimize the box.
Right. And so when you would have, like, 10 of these chat windows open on this big monitor, that's the way we communicate. A lot of times, the biggest challenge is to slow it down, because there's – and so when I see it, everybody sees it. Everybody sees it. And so Fires is watching, you know, and these things happen simultaneously. And sometimes you have to say, okay, slow your roll, boys. We got to wait till so-and-so weighs in, and then you're okay. And they're ready to go, man. They're ready to go. So it's, the challenge can be sometimes it goes too fast.
Yeah. There's a lot of shit. Yeah. And it's just too much information for most people.
Yeah. And then sometimes – people all that are watching that are what are called voyeurs who really are doing it for their own situational awareness. Sometimes they bomb stuff in, and you pick up the phone and you call them and you say, hey, man, you are not welcome in there. They have a battalion commander. They know what they're doing, right? Stay the fuck out of that, all right? That's not what that's for. Oh, sorry about that. No, it's all right. Everybody makes mistakes, but okay for your situational awareness, not okay for you to be involved in it. All right. Sorry.
Yeah.
No problem, man. Unless it happens again, and then you call them up, and so. Yeah, so the communication thing is crazy. And then what happens is the wind starts blowing, the dishes start moving, and you lose all that. And you're back to green gear and radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you got to be just as good as doing it old-fashioned World War II COC as you are doing it the digital way. But the digital way is crazy fast, crazy fast. So anyway, so that's kind of the medevac process, and then the bird launches and they do their thing. So
then they get there, they secure you. Yeah, as the birds come in the zone, it'll contact the ground unit that got that frequency, and then you mark it with either like an air panel, something. Smoke. Smoke is okay. Smoke is not always great because the enemy knows. You know, when they see smoke, the enemy knows something's coming up. Like red, green. They know that that's a burp. That's a helo coming in. So, not always smoke, depending on where you're in. And then, you know, the one thing that, you know, we had to push our Marines not to do is don't approach the damn helicopter. Let them come to you. You know, it slowed the process down immensely. So we had Marines trying to get this guy to the bird, and then they get to the door that's closed, and the crew chief is out on the other side looking for the Marines.
Right.
Like, oh, guys, come on. That was the stuff that we used to work on. You know, like when I'd go out and see, like, how do we make this a more seamless transition between us and them, the communication side. And that's why I used to run with them was I would listen to our communications, listen to theirs, and then we'd come back and we'd streamline it. Right. Okay, hey, yeah, I could see where this gets confusing.
And a lot,
or then from the outside, you're like, yeah.
And a lot of times they're doing it for the first time. You know, and,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd like to think that, well, we're all doing this a lot. Well, you know, how many times are you running an urgent medevac as a squad? Hopefully not too many. You know, and so, and everybody's learning. And then just when they know it really great, they rotate. And you got a whole group of other guys who are going to learn. And even if they've had previous deployments, last time they were a fire team leader, well, this time they're a squad leader. Now they're leading the whole event. It's a different view. And
yeah.
So it's great to have guys like Mike, you know, out there just coaching and teaching.
Yeah, and like I said, it's fun until you get shot at in a helicopter, and then it's not fun anymore. All the fun goes away. You never think about those things. You know, that was my problem. I never thought through, like, every time I get into a situation like that, like, you know, this is not a good situation.
Again?
That usually came up, like, when I was on, you know, like, already in it. Hey, this is not a good situation. You know?
You're supposed to hear that voice before you go.
See, no, because the voice is like, man, this is going to be fun.
We have a good friend, Larry Nicholson, who just retired as the CG of 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force, right? So we're in Fallujah, and the last day he goes, and I was flying out that night, and he says, I was flying out to Takadam. So I get done with work, and he says, hey, Matt, do you want to go do battlefield circulation with me? And I said, no. I said, do you need me to go? He said, no. But come on, we'll have fun. I said, no, I'm not going. He goes, what, are you afraid? I said, no, I just don't want to be that guy in that story. Set to fly out that night, hanging out with the colonel. I said, battlefield tourism, sir, I'm not in it. If you need somebody.
Just went out. Got himself shot.
Exactly. I said, sir, I'm not sure if you know, but, like, people get dead out there, so I'm not that guy. He goes, nice, Mac. Nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had that. We had our chaplain almost get his head blown off one night doing that, going out on a joyride. Hey, sir, you mind if I tag along with you? No, chaps, come on.
Yeah. Come on, dumbass.
So, there was this piece of shrapnel that Colonel Nicholson brought back, and I swear to God, it was about.
Oh, it was huge.
Yeah, it was like 8 or 9 inches by about 4.
You could have used it as a machete.
Exactly. And this flew by the chaplain's head and stuck in the back of the Humvee. And
yeah.
I'm like, and then the curl, and then Nicholson says to me, I think he got cured of any thoughts of battlefield circulation in the future as a tourist. And look, when you need to go, you go. When somebody says, hey, man, I need one more guy, we're short somebody in the vehicle, grab your rifle. It's your job. But when right. people are just dicking around out there, it's okay. Somebody else.
No, I mean, yeah, you don't need to complicate it any. It's just.
And then, then there's the guys who go out trolling for their combat action ribbons.
Oh.
Right? And we had guys doing that in Ramadi in 2004. They used to love to go on soft stuff because they knew there would be shots fired. And they wouldn't have to. But if you're a professional, you look at those guys and you roll your eyes. You know, you're like, come on, man. But they weren't having any of it. Here's another email. I think the gunner's story about being on the water is one of the funnier stories I've ever heard him tell. The other funny story that he told that I heard was in the C-130, I think it was, when it comes out of the clouds.
Yeah, that scared the shit out of me.
That was another keyboard replacement that I had, thanks to your program. Those are two pretty funny stories, though. And they're both they're the same story.
The Harvest Hawk, yeah, just different environments. The Harvest Hawk was probably the scariest, though.
But see, this was Mike. Mike, there's an element of little kid on with Mike because of his job, and he can go anywhere and do anything. He's like a little kid, like, what's going on over there? Yeah, I'll go do that. And because he could do that. Nobody else could do that. Everybody else had lanes and jobs and responsibilities. Well, Mike's job was kind of an overarching one. You know, liaison with soft units? Yeah, I'm going to go hang out with them. Okay, right? Want to go down and hang out with that unit because something's going on there? Gunner's headed down there. He had like a Visa card for all that shit. One of the most, probably the most unique job, and truth be told, one of the cooler jobs on the battlefield, if you could not be in command. You would want Mike's job because it was most fun and most interesting. And access to Marines, which was very cool. So
that was the coolest thing I always liked.
Hey, boys, what's...
Well, because it's instant, you know, right. you're instant credibility, and it's just up to you to screw it up. But.
Right.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Too
much fun, man. What in the world is going on? So Ron has got some shit to do, man.
Like, what do you mean? Oh, before he gets sworn in?
Yeah. Oh God.
Like, what kind of shit?
He's got some classes he's got to take. He's got some classes coming up.
Are you his chief of staff or something? You're sounding like a chief of staff right now.
I am. I'm his chief of staff of his transition.
And I like that.
So I have to send out. So like I said, what I did was I contacted the folks down in Austin about this incident command system, you know, for expanding incidents, you know, the stuff the civilians go through. And then, so I created his password, his email, his whole account with these guys. And it was funny. The ladies were like, well, sir, usually. And I said, well, I'm his chief of staff. And they were like, they started laughing. They're like, we've never heard that one. Here you go. Write this down.
Hey, we know how to do transition, Matt. It's not like it's not like it's a mystery, for God's sake.
Well, this stuff that they talk about, it's like for them, for civilians, incident response, and you know, because they got a COC over here, it's an EOC, Emergency Operational Center. It's pretty nice.
Yeah,
but for them, this is like putting a man in space. It's hard.
Oh, really?
It's all new to them, most of the people. And the thing that they go off of, and don't let this get out, is they use FEMA. Oh. You know? If you're ever going to try and do incident response or emergency operations center, don't use FEMA as your guideline.
It's the guideline.
I know. But you're using the federal. Oh. God.
No, it is.
Yeah, that's why I always say, God help us. If they're using that as their guideline, and they let FEMA dictate, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there's some smart guys in FEMA. They're just not the ones coming up with this course content.
Yeah. You know what? I spent some time in our EOC. I had some people ask me, hey, would you come down and see what we – I said, I'd love to, man. I said, I'm good at that stuff. And, I mean, I've done it a lot in my life. And
right.
And so you watch what's going on. And because I remember I got interested after the Hurricane Katrina, you know, when you watched, if you've ever worked in a combat operations center, you've got TVs on, right? And you're watching CNN because sometimes something would happen on CNN and you wouldn't know about it. Like, what's that? Holy shit.
Yeah.
And so you're watching that and you're seeing all these people down at the Superdome and they don't have water. They don't have, you know, they don't have toilets. And it's like, look, we can get helicopters there within 24 hours, right? They don't need any support. They can exist at an outlying airfield. They can come pick up pallets of water. They can move porta-johns in pallets. They can set them down and they can leave. Like, what is going on there? And that went on for days and days and days. And you know in their EOC, they're watching this shit. So what are you doing? And it's like, man, that is some sorry-ass stuff going on there. And so I kind of got interested, like, well, what's going on inside of that thing? And so
it's tough to watch some of that stuff, though.
Yeah, you know, and it's frustrating because it's like, no, man, you can do better than this. You can do better than this. Look, but you know what? And again, it's the first time a lot of those people are doing that. You know, a lot of the first responders have done it, but not a lot of the emergency people have done it. So
the guys that are responsible for sending all the resources to certain areas.
Yeah, and then there's a protocol that the state's got to request this, and the state's got to do this. And some of those decision makers get overwhelmed. And it's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. So, but I became interested because it made no sense to me that those people would sit for days without help, and it was just stupid looking.
Yeah.
So, anyway, all right. What else you got going today? So you're chief of staff of the transition. I like that. It sounds very official. Do you have a business card?
No. This is just. It's so easy. I do it on my when I have time.
All right, so you got that. So Ron's got a lot of stuff before he takes over as Justice of the Peace. What's his official
title? No. He is the top dude, man. He is the county judge. He's the judge of the county. He's got a lot of big responsibilities. So he's kind of like, okay, so the mayor runs the city.
Right.
The judge runs the county.
I don't understand that.
So the county judge, he is the director of the of all of the emergency response stuff. So he is the main guy. He is the chairman, the director, whatever the hell you want to call him. It's funny because Brenda, his wife, her title once they assume this, she's literally the first lady of Hood County. And she's like, oh, God, don't ever say that. But, no, it's he oversees, like, the commissioner's court. He's he sits on top of that. He holds commissioner's court. He does all of that stuff. But he is the head county guy.
So what about the
– the what? So within the county.
Within the county. So what's the form of government that they have?
The commissioners.
So they have commissioners.
Yep. Of the precincts, right? And then you have your sheriff. He's the law enforcement.
Okay.
Then your commissioners are the budgetary guys. And then your judge is the one that brings them all together. He sits on top of all of the county clerk.
The judge is like the county supervisor or the mayor?
Yeah, exactly.
He's the number one executive in the county?
Yep.
Why do they call him a judge?
Because he is a judge. He is a judicial branch of the government here. He sits over three courts, probate, juvenile of some sort degree, and third one I can't think of. But he sits over those, and his courtroom is the court, is the courthouse in the square. That's where his office is at, and that's his courtroom upstairs.
Wow. So when I hear judge, I don't hear chief executive.
He's a judge. And he also
office of the county judge, Hood County overview. The county judge is the most visible official in county government. Often thought of as the county's chief executive officer, a county judge has broad judicial and administrative powers, including serving as the presiding officers of the county's policymaking body, the Commissioner's Court, referred to as Chief Justice by early Texas Constitution. The current office of county judge was established. I didn't know that. I thought he was just a judge that heard cases.
Big deal.
Why didn't you guys speak English? Like, what the fuck?
I know.
What a... He's not a judge. He's a chief executive of Hood County.
Well, his title is judge.
Well, shit, man. That's way more impressive than judge.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to, like, hear cases of, like, dog catching and, and like, he broke my windows and won't pay for it, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, he's topped up.
Well, tell Ron, I said, congratulations for being a chief executive.
I wouldn't waste my time on someone that's
Yeah, you would. If he's your friend. You would help him.
Yeah, but this was more important than that.
You think? Hello, I can't believe it wasn't more contested.
So people want to always be in that position.
Wow.
You can't have that.
We can't have that in Hood County. And the county issues are different than city issues. It's kind of interesting. County's got some interesting stuff that they deal with that is much broader than the cities, and not only in land management, the roads that they maintain. It's a lot of stuff that counties deal with, so pretty interesting.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I'm teaching the ladies next weekend?
What?
Land navigation.
Come on.
No, they want land navigation.
What do you mean?
So they wanted how to use the compass, how to read a map.
Do they know, do they understand north, south, east, west, or forward, backward, left, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be worse than, like, land navigation class at TBS.
Oh, without a doubt. But, it's not that hard. You know what the biggest thing that helped me reading a topographical map was? Because when you first look at it, it's like, what is that, like, bowl of spaghetti? Especially in a place like Quantico where there's a gazillion fingers, right? And you're just looking like, what does that mean? And then somebody said, if you look where the blue is, that's the low ground. And then it went, I had this experience where it went, I went, oh, look at that. It makes sense to me now. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go, like, should I start off and then finish with, like, we'll do a civilian map conversion to MGRS using,
well, why do I need that if I have a GPS on my phone and I have, I can do that?
But I'm...
What are you going to teach?
Mostly just reading a map, how to navigate, using a compass, how to use a compass... how do you do all the stuff on a compass, on a map? How can you set the declination on your compass?
Good luck at that, man.
It's going to be fun.
True north.
I can see myself. This is going to be like, well, you know what, though? It's going to be exactly like entry-level Marines.
Exactly.
You know, that you're like, okay, here we go. Work with me. But I'm not going to get too crazy, talking about radians and shit like that. Not gonna. like their heads are going to have to go. No.
Well, you know, basic things, right?
So I'll stop once I see the goo start coming out.
if the Earth, right? If you're in someplace flat, how far can you see? I mean, just you know, it's like 12 miles before the
crater. Yeah, 12 to 14 miles.
Yeah, it's at least 12 miles. And you know, and little things like that, you're like, oh. And then you can be in the car. You can be in the car with your husband and say, well, that's no more than 12 miles away from us. What? Yeah. I learned that in my land nav class.
Right.
Oh my god.
But I'm not going to get him out and do a pace count. So like I said, I'm just going to go.
Why not?
Over,
pace count's good.
Well, I'm going to go over just simple stuff like the margin, you know, what's in the margin of a map, how to read that.
Right. Right.
I'm going to talk about map colors.
Okay.
How to read a grid?
So we're going to use a topographical map?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So I'm going to read, you know, grid lines, directions, and then we're going to go into some land navigation. We're going to talk about elevation and relief. You know, the simple stuff.
Yeah, you got to go slow, as you know. You got to go slow at when you start because it's like the whole world's spinning when you're doing that. But after you learn it a little bit, you're like, oh, I can do this now.
Yeah, once you become you're very familiar and you're very comfortable with the map, it's easy.
Right. No, I can see it. It's a good life skill. It's a good life skill to have because it's, you know.
But I'm not going to go into like, this is how the percent. How do you, okay, here is your next problem. We are going to determine the percentage of slope in meters.
Teaching how to shoot a section and a resection?
That's easy, though.
How about teaching how to triangulate? That's easy. That's a good life skill.
Yeah. Intersection. Re is me. Resection is me. Re is me. But we're going to talk about Lars.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, we're going to bring old Lar back out. Oh, man, it's going to be fun. Like I said, I haven't done this in a long time.
You talk about blasts of the past. Holy smokes. Land nav. You know what? I will tell you one thing the Marine Corps does well is teaches land nav in the worst place you could ever want to do it in your life.
Shit, yeah.
And then you go out there and, you know, so you're teaching there and it's what you do for a living, right? But you want to be home for dinner and so you're getting ready to do a patrol and you're like, and you know, all right, who's the navigator? Sir Musselman is. Hey, Musselman, come here. Sir. You good at this? Yes, sir. How do you do this? And then he says the words that strike fear into your heart. Sir, I dead reckon. Okay, Musselman.
I dead reckon.
Musselman just got fired. Who's next? Okay, because he said the two words that I don't allow on a patrol. Dead reckon, okay? Look, I work here for a living. I don't dead reckon, okay?
Yeah, but I smoke.
Sir?
I smoked that land nav course in Quantico to the point they investigated me.
For good reason.
Because they were like, no one does it this fast. I said, I did.
Yeah. But you know what? I'll tell you what. I love land navigation.
So do I.
Yeah. And then learn it, the art of learning how to do it to confirm what you see with your eyes to make sure that you're seeing it on the map. And then confirm it with your compass. Because I don't care how good you are, at some point you'll get sideways and you'll look at your compass and you'll say, and then you'll tap your compass again. Yeah. You'll tap your compass and like, wait a minute, it keeps saying north, it's supposed to say east.
Oh yeah.
And you're like,
I said,
is there a power line near me? Like what the, and then you like stop. My
I used to look at,
up.
Like, okay, I'm going to travel from here, from where I'm at now, the next box. I know exactly, like, it would be like, you know, it's 1.2 kilometers away, okay? And then I would look at my path and I go, okay, I'm going to go up a gradual slope to a small plateau that probably about 12 feet long and then back down a steep slope. So I mentally see, as I'm looking at my finger going across this path, what the terrain should look like.
Right.
And then is like, okay, I'm going to come up here and my box is going to be to the left of this finger, there's a small draw coming up from the stream bed. So I can visually, for me, it was always a visual. So I would do this, like, okay, I'm on the correct path. I know my, I'd take my compass out, make sure I'm still, yep. And I know my pace count, but I wouldn't do that.
Right.
I never, right. like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 63, 100, no. I never did that. And so I'd get near it, and then I'd like, okay, there's the draw, there's the finger, there's the slope, okay, my box should be right. And I'd walk up there, and I was colorblind. So I was there in the fall, all the colors, you know, all the different shades of colors are all over the floor, ground now.
Right.
And the boxes were, you know, were colored. And so I couldn't, most of the time I run into my box. I'm like, okay, my box should be, boom, it hit me in the chest. I'm like, oh, what's this ammo can doing in the middle of this forest? Oh, yeah, it's my box.
But good navigators use all those tools, right? Not pace right. count, not so much. I mean, when you need to, you might pull it out if you were in close terrain or whatnot and really dense vegetation. But most of the time, I mean, you see them looking at their map, looking at the terrain, looking at their compass, map, terrain, compass, map, terrain, compass. And so I would take those guys, like the navigator, Musselman, and I'd say, okay, look, if you think a dead reckoning works, okay, it's not going to work today. And let me teach you how to navigate. And I'd be like, sir, you know, sir, I'm prior enlisted. Yeah, okay, I got it. What was your prior?
Dead reckoning always.
What was your prior enlisted MOS? I was in supply, sir. Okay. All right, so now you're going to make your living in the field, okay? So let me just show you how to do this, okay? Because I am not missing dinner in my house tonight, all right, because we're fucking 3 hours late because you got lost and I let you play like dumb person in the mist, okay? So here's how it works, right? You know, you'll go over the navigation plan, right, on the terrain model, right? You'll confirm that with your map, with your compass. The compass is there for your protection, okay? It's like a condom. Okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I played that game.
Right? When you
In the orders, I always went through that, but I never did that.
When you look at your compass and you think that it's lying to you, okay, that's a red flag, okay? The compass confirms what you're seeing on the ground, what you're seeing on the map, okay?
Yeah.
And it's constantly through that swirl. And if you do that, you'll be spot on all the time. If you and there are places that you can dead reckon, because the terrain features are that. But here in Quantico, okay, let me just tell you, you'll get lost as fuck. Because I know instructors that do. Like, sir? Okay, so I'm going to help you navigate today. Bottom line, I'm not missing dinner tonight. I don't want to say that I was selfish, but I was like that. I hated getting lost. And I would let him, I would kind of watch him. Like, if you were getting lost, and it was easy to do, and so we're not. So we get now. I remember we're getting ready to cross one of the hard surface roads, right? So right, we're going to cross the danger area. Flank protection goes out, right? The point sitting right on the edge of the road or a little bit back from it. Patrol leader goes up, takes a look, blah blah blah. So I go up to the navigator and I said, "What's going on?" He's like, "Danger area, sir." I said, "Got it." Was there a hard surface road on your land nav plan? And then they get the right. They get the oh shit.
Yeah.
Why didn't you pull? Are we supposed to cross an asphalt road? No, sir. Okay. Go tell the patrol leader we need to stop and you need to unfuck yourself. Okay. Just tell him that. And
I'm missing dinner.
Exactly. No, I would intervene before I knew. I knew how much time I had. I'd done that shit every day. But again, you're trying to teach, you're trying to let them, and you're hoping that feature catches them. And then you're teaching about limiting features and shit like that. Like, hey, these are things that you should know about. But I'll tell you what, Quantico is a bitch to navigate in. And that's one thing, when you come out of there navigating, you can normally navigate pretty well in most parts of the world. Except,
the desert.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The desert's hard and so is the fucking jungle, man.
Yeah, the thick jungle.
Yeah, you're like, whoa. Musselman's screaming because he ran into a fruit bat, and I don't know where the fuck I am right now. And the desert all looks the same at night. And so in my experience out in 29 Palms, my Marines are like, sir, we're not going the right way. And I would say, shut up, Calhoun. Have I ever got you lost? No, sir. Tonight's going to be the night, though. I'm feeling it. And then we'd show, and because if you don't know, when in those situations, you've got to learn how to trust the compass. Because the compass never fucking lies to you. Even though you do think it's, no. My compass is, oh man, there must be the radio or some shit, man. Because I know. And you're wrong as fuck. So, I love navigating. I used to navigate with Major Milstead at the basic school. He was an Anglico guy. So whenever his company was doing shit, he'd always come find me. Mac, let's go. I'm like, again? Do I got to bust it off in your ass again and teach you how to navigate? He's like, you're so screwed up. But it was fun. I loved the land now. I love that.
Oh, sure, that. I like it too.
Like all the hooky root compasses you could buy. And then we came out, then we got the first digital GPSs that showed up. And they were about the size of your car radio back in the 60s. And, I mean, they were monstrosities, and it's like only like a couple guys knew how to use it. What's it say? And so, and then slowly but surely.
Yeah.
What about
all right, brother? I'll let you go.
Did you ever buy the Ranger beads?
No. No.
They teach that shit though.
Yeah, I know. That's, you know, in some certain cases, I could see them working. You know, they used to say like, pick up rocks. Shit. Why would you pick up rocks? You know.
Come on, yeah.
I usually had rocks in my pocket to begin with. So, I mean, it just, whatever you can do to keep track of, that was good. But the Ranger beads, it was just another, I knew guys that used to carry those on their uniform, on their gear. It's like, so, whatever.
Yeah, you know, and if you, again, I think if you're a good navigator, you kind of outgrew that in a hurry. Because you kind of knew where you were. And I'm one of those guys that I used to volunteer to be the navigator. Most guys don't like that, but I loved it. I loved doing that, man. I thought it was fun. And you're in on it and stuff like that. So anyway, land nav. I wish I could come, man. I'd love to be in the course.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be fun.
You should take them out with a compass and some boxes, man. You should go set up a course. That would be a kick
in
the ass.
Well, that's next. I mean, come on.
Not on day one. You got to do the map stuff. And then meeting two, then we shoot Asmus and we see who gets it right. And then we do that. And then day three, we go out and practical app that, man. Yeah.
Day three is we blindfold them in the back of a truck and then drop them off and have them go find way back.
I don't know about that. But I think it'd be fun. But those skills, man, those are life skills, I think.
Those are fun skills.
Yeah, no, it was always fun. But like I said, how are we gonna do this? Sir, I'm a dead wreck. Well, what was the other word? Terrain associate.
Terrain associate.
Yeah, we ain't doing that, bro. Sir? Yeah, we're not doing that. Okay, just so you know. I'll teach you though, I'll help you navigate. I ain't missing it.
If it's me trying to get back, we ain't playing that stupid shit.
We are not. You know, and then I'll tell you another one. On patrolling, we're fucking around at danger areas, right? Beaver Dam Run. We get to Beaver Dam Run, and then so what are you not supposed to do? Rule one, don't spend a lot of time in the danger area. Okay? So now we're sending out flank security. Then we got to get guys on the far side. Blah, blah. We're pressing an hour. And I said, what the fuck are we doing? Well, so we're trying to find the right fording spot. And I said, how about this? And I walked straight into Beaver Dam. Actually, I dove into Beaver Dam Run.
Some parts of Beaver Dam Run are deep.
They were, right? And so I looked at them and I said,
you were swimming in some parts.
I said, how about that? Let's fucking go. They're like, oh, shit. They all dive in. We're soaked to the shoulders. But it wasn't too cold, so it wasn't that bad. But it was fun. That's a fun place to work. And yeah, Marines are motivated. Lieutenants are motivated. They want to learn. And
so Marines, yeah, lieutenants are definitely motivated.
They're motivated.
Not like those enlisted pieces of crap.
Well, you know, I never taught junior enlisted guys. I only my own Marines, and they were, you know, doing land nav with your Marines is because first of all, it's primarily a shit talking event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's guys who are really good at it. And then after you do it, and then and you let them teach each other, everybody learns. Fun, but there's always, you know. And then a rattlesnake shows up at Pendleton, and the whole event turns
into let's play with the snake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, where are they, sir? Last I saw them, they had a rattlesnake kind of surrounded. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Okay. And here they'd come. Rattlesnake, headless rattlesnake, squirming in somebody's hand, everybody with this huge shit-eating grin. Hey, sir, check it out. Now we're late.
Buck doesn't like snakes.
I don't like snakes.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I like them.
I don't associate the word fun with snakes.
No, they're cool.
Why do you say
that? I like them. I do. I don't know why. I like them. There was one time in Cave Springs waking up in the middle of the morning, and it was cold out.
Right.
And so we were sleeping, in the breeze, under the stars, just a sleeping bag on your isomat.
Right, right, right.
And I rolled over, and I was like, what the hell? And my boots, I always took my boots off and laid them, but put my cover over the top of the boots so nothing would crawl inside.
Right.
But my boots were already off, and they were on the side, and my trousers and my blouse were folded up to like a pillow,
right.
You know?
Right.
So I'm like, what is that feeling? It's like, oh my God, this is uncomfortable. So I thought it was my trousers and my blouse had come undone, you know, from this little bundle I did, and I reached underneath where my head was. And I remember grabbing, like, it felt like rope. And I grabbed this coil of rope, and I pulled it out, and it was morning. It was just, the sun was just coming up, and it was freaking cold out. And I pulled this thing up, and in my hand is this big coiled snake. He wasn't happy, because he was warm down there. And so now he's like, and he's slowly coming undone. And I was like, oh, and it hit me and I looked over and I tossed them over where the Marines were. And oh my God, dude, talk about funny as shit. Cause you get guys up. First of all, it's very hard to stand up while you're in a sleeping bag. These guys stood straight up. Boomp. Don't know how they did it, but I look over and there's like three or four green ghosts dancing, trying to get out of the sleeping bag, running,
doing the bunny hop. Doing the bunny hop.
Yeah, trying to get out of their sleeping bag, screaming about a snake. And I was laughing so hard.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
You know,
God.
Cave Springs, after it would burn on occasion. If you go up there doing training and it would be cold, it would drop, you're up in the mountains back there. I mean, it would drop into
freaking the snow up there.
Yeah, low 40s, high 30s. And you'd wake up and everything, you'd have frost on the ground and whatnot, and you'd find snakes. You'd find snakes that got caught out of their holes when the temperature dropped, and they'd be like, they're cold-blooded animals, so they'd be like, stop, someplace.
Yeah.
And you're like, kill
them. Oh, they'd be sunbathing everywhere.
Yeah, kill them, boys.
I didn't kill them.
No, we did. We tried to.
Oh.
Yeah. In the spirit of St. Patrick, ridding the planet of snakes.
No.
Yeah. So there you have it. All right, man. Look, good luck. Now that I know you're like a power broker in Hood County, transitional chief of staff of the chief executive. I'm impressed. Holy shit.
Yeah. You thought that judge was just like some little.
Yeah. I thought he was a dog catcher.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, this is awesome, man. He's going, Ron's going to be the dog catcher.
Did you see that picture I sent you?
Which one?
Look at the last picture.
Last picture I have is Kyle Carpenter, Bill Clinton. Oh. Some people say I'm a mean person, but it's not true. I have the heart of a sweet girl in a jar on my desk.
I love it. That's a good one. I'm not a mean person. I have the heart of a sweet little girl.
You know what I say?
In a jar on my desk.
I'm not a mean person. I'm a nice person. If I'm only mean if you make me be mean. I'm not a mean person.
Oh, no, yeah. I am the most fun-loving, great guy, but once you make me be mean or be the jerk, no, I am the best.
I have no problem with it either. I have no problem with it. So yeah, it's like if you see me being mean, that's not me.
Yeah. I'll have no fear if the gunner scorn.
I'm a victim in that situation. I didn't intend to be mean, but somebody's victimized me, so I have to be mean.
Right.
Yeah. So I knew you'd understand. All right, man.
All right. Talk to you later.
There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman here on an extended version of All Marine Radio post-Thanksgiving. That'll do it on a Monday. Tomorrow you're going to hear Grant Newsham, who hasn't been on the program in a while. So we're going to talk we're going to catch up with Grant Newsham tomorrow. So always fun to have him on. And hear what he's writing about and get his thoughts on actually any intelligence event that's going on around the world, whether it's the Chinese, the Russians, where we find ourselves in. So, don't miss tomorrow. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hope everybody had a good weekend and caught up on your rest and enjoyed food and football and whatnot. So don't be afraid to get out there and PT a little bit. Get your body back to normal. My thanks to Alex Hollings. He needs a generator. Anybody who knows where to find a good generator, don't be afraid to let me know and I'll pass along to him. But congratulations to him. Now the editor of the website Fighter Sweep, FIGTERSWEEP.com. Ohio man's familiar with it. Yeah, said Alex done a good job since he showed up. So very good. That's awesome. Anyway, thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on a Monday. All Marine Radio over and out.